on 1278 and 1530 AM on DAB Digital Radio, on the Pulse 2 app and online at pulse2.co.uk. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show with Aaron the Power Bauer, Super Mario Elliot Minchella, the Reggae Warrior Ross Peltier, and Robbie Hunter Paul.
Good evening. Welcome to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show, live on Pulse 2, without Robbie Hunter Paul. Easter has taken its toll on everyone. No Pelts this week either. He's celebrating his birthday. What are we saying, Elliot? 29th?
Well, since he's become a dad, he looks about in his 30s
now. Senior front rower. Elliot Minchella is here as always. And joining us tonight, commercial director for the Bradford Bulls, Mr. Damien Irving. Damien, how are you?
A pleasure to be here, gents. I've waited a long time for this invitation, so it's
on debut. On debut. Slightly less fatigued, I imagine, Damien, with the rigours of Easter than Mr. Minchella to your left. Elliot, first of all, body, mind, everything like that, how are you holding up coming out of Easter?
Knackered. Don't feel too bad. We've had a couple of days off. So we played a good Friday at Halifax, then Monday we had Barrow at home, and then we had Tuesday and today off. So today I've just been trying to get back into it. We're back in training tomorrow. I'm actually looking forward to it. Everyone looks forward to a few days off, but when you get a couple of days off, you do miss it. We've had a good Easter, two wins. The Good Friday game was real good. Good comeback again. Don't know why we do that. But the Monday one, probably not so good. But most important thing, we got 2 points, which is good over Easter, two wins.
Performance on Easter Monday, though, probably not the most important thing in the world, and not anything. You're probably never going to really see a sparkling performance from anyone over Easter. You said, didn't you, it was one of the flattest games you've ever been involved in. Is that just a sign of Easter Monday, do you think, or more a sign of where you guys are?
I think it was the Easter Monday, and the same with the Barrow team as well. That, you know, for the opening half really of the game, it was just so flat. Even the stadium, I think I think John said it after the game. Is it really worth letting people pay for that game with that entertainment? I'm sure we'll come on to that later. But the most important thing from a playing point of view, we got the 2 points. It wasn't pretty at all. And Barrow, they were spirited as well that second half. They did come back and give us a bit of a scare. So we showed a bit of character to hold on to the win, which is, you know, that's important as well. So yeah, I'm really happy with a win, but not vintage at all.
Damien, obviously, Easter over here is very much part of the fixture list, part of tradition. You've been involved with the Sharks, Cronulla in the NRL. If the Easter idea was ever floated in the NRL, two games in 4 days, how would it go down, do you think?
Oh, look, one, I don't think it needs to be. They stretch out their rounds a little bit over Thursday through to the public holiday Mondays as it is. But that's only one or two clubs generally. You've got to remember, Aaron, we're from an environment for the last 20 years, the biggest clashes in Origin have always been backed up. They've always been Wednesday nights. So
you can play Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Sunday in Origin
Wednesday,
NRL?
Saturday. Most players that are involved in an Origin on a Wednesday are sort of shadow players, and they assess things and but most of them do play. It's interesting, a lot of the players would say they'd rather play, you know, Wednesday into a Friday or a Friday night into a Sunday than they would have a 3 or 4 day break, just because the bruises start to calcify a bit and you start to feel a little bit better. Really, I think I'm used to the backing up. I think once or twice a year, I do think it's okay. My big concern with the talk in the last few days about doing away with a double Easter game is leaving a public holiday Monday, a bank holiday Monday, without rugby league, because people find other things to do, you know, and they will go along to other events. Hey, I'd like it at Bradford Park Avenue, where I'm involved down there, because more people would come down to that match. But from rugby league point of view, you try and keep as many games as you can so people can come down and see it. So there's an argument both ways.
I think there's obviously a dozen different ways you could go about rejigging the Easter period. Some people were saying, you know, we had great weekend, great weather on Saturday and Sunday, and there was no rugby because everyone played Friday, Monday. So is there a case to go down the NRL route of maybe spreading it 6-7 games across Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and sort of having rugby league available for people to watch every day, albeit your team's only playing once over that period?
Look, I'm a bit like you guys. I don't like having a day with nothing to do. And when you get a day like a Sunday or even Christmas Day, to be fair, which is a holiday off and all of that, and you're watching bad reruns on the television. So, no, I think there is a case to that, to stretch it out and do your best with it. But do you know what? It's not overly broken. I think the quality of the fixtures on Monday, there could be an argument to say they're a bit flat or a bit poor in quality. They might not have been as well. I don't know that there are overly amount of injuries that came as about. Yeah. So if it's managed and it's only once or twice a year, I think we can keep doing it.
What do you do, Minnie, in between Friday and Monday? What's Saturday and Sunday then generally?
Recovery. Yeah, so we finished Friday, so the game Friday at Halifax, and then we had Saturday off. So basically just stay out of the sun, you know, because it was nice. Don't go sit in the sun. Make sure you hydrate real well, eat well. Don't, you know, not too much exercise, really. A little bit, but not too much. Sunday we was in training at Oddsall for a bit of a team run, and then we had an ice bath for a bit of recovery as well after that. And then, yeah, same again Sunday. So we didn't really sit outside in the sun. No barbecues for us. And then, yeah, Monday we played again in another 20-odd degree heat, which it must have been nice for the fans sitting in the 25 degrees heat at Oddsall. But yeah, it's not much social time.
No.
Even though you have got 2 days, but you try not to do too much because you are tired. And then you got to think there's another game just around the corner as well. The one thing I'd flag up is at championship level, especially for the part-time lads, it doesn't affect me personally this year, but speaking from the past when I've been part-time, it is even harder than on that Tuesday morning. Them lads have to get up for work at 7, 8 o'clock, and it's hard enough getting up at that time anyway, isn't it?
I think some of the lads probably work on the weekends as well, don't they, you know, to make up the sort of shortfall
through
the week.
That might be something to look at a championship level, you know, player welfare sort of thing, and is that the right thing to do for them lads to be doing that? Especially if they've got manual jobs.
Well, the League One lads only played... You'll have only played once over Easter last year, won't you? So there might be an argument that Super League, you know, the crowds are there and certainly the television interest is there, so they do go around twice, but maybe the part-time lads don't.
They're full-time, obviously.
And the part-time lads sit out. In terms of Bulls, though, good weekend. Easter's obviously the weekend where the table starts to take shape a little bit. Look, you're in the top five. You've had a good run, 6 wins in a row, and as we were saying before we came on air, a really good run of fixtures coming up that'll tell a lot about where the boys are.
Yeah, it's quite exciting. We've won six on the bounce, and I don't really think we've hit full form yet.
Yeah.
No, we're nowhere near.
Yeah.
We've shown it in glimpses, that, you know, the couple of comebacks we've had against Featherstone and Halifax. Great win at Halifax on Friday, massive win that, to get one over them at their place as well, big crowd. But yeah, then, you know, the upcoming fixtures, we've got Rochdale this week at home, then we're in Toronto, then it's the Leeds game, then it's the Summer Bash. We've got a great month coming up, you know, we've already won six on the run, and you know everyone's confident. But like I said, we're nowhere near it as strapped, so we've got loads of improvement, and everyone's got a spring in the step at the minute.
I'm sure the Leeds game will come into proper focus around the week of it, Damien. But commercially at the club, that's hard not to be excited by the prospect of that Leeds game on a Saturday afternoon on the BBC, isn't it?
Oh, it's massive. I mean, in live sport at most levels, but particularly in championship level in rugby league, you're crying out for those live TV fixtures. I mean, it is everything. It's everything in terms of your sponsors. It's great for the players. It's really great for the brand and the game. It's just one of those lucky, you know, jackpot the draws that you want. I think the game wants it and deserves it. But you know what? More so, Aaron, you know, it's for the supporters. The Bradford Bulls supporters for the last 3 or 4 years have had it tough. And, you know, they've heard about their dads or their older brothers and sisters saying, I remember when at Oddsall it was this big event and it was great. And they've got that back again for Leeds coming over to visit. And I think for them, more than anyone, I think it's really well deserved and a great draw. And it'll be buzzing in there. So I'm really so happy for them.
Yeah, fingers crossed the weather is just as good as it was this weekend as well, and it'll be a cracking day. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we'll do our amateur all-star team. The boys are going to have a little bit of a rant about something going on in the game and a whole lot more. But before that, let's do the travel.
Pulse 2 Travel.
With Living Well, walking is simple, free, and one of the easiest ways to get more active. Search Active 10 online.
There are long delays in stop-start traffic due to an overturned caravan on the M62. That's eastbound from Ainley Top to Wakefield Road. Travel time there is 30 minutes. Slow traffic on Leeds Road between Shipley Airedale Road, the traffic lights, and Leicesterdyke traffic lights. There's a usual slow traffic on Killingall Road, northbound between Leeds Road and the A658 Otley Road. For all that and more, visit pulse2.co.uk.
Live on 12:78 and 15:30 a.m. on DAB Digital Radio, on the Pulse 2 app and online at pulse2.co.uk. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Welcome back. Welcome back to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show, live on Pulse 2 with me, Aaron Bauer, Elliot Minchella and Damien Irving. We're going to be getting stuck into all the big topics in the game shortly, but before that, we're going to do our usual weekly segment. It's the Amateur All-Star Team of the Week. We do this every week on the show, so if you want to get your junior team shouted out on the show, just drop us a line at pulse2.co.uk. Let's jump straight into it this week. It is Thornhill Juniors.
The RHP Show Team of the Week.
I'm Ash. I'm one of the coaches here at Thornhill Trojans Under Sevens. And Phil is the other coach. Well, I started off as a junior at Thornhill. They made my way up to play first grade at the club. Phil played as a junior at Dewsbury Moor. And then he did a 5-year spell at Bradford Bulls. Well, both of us take enormous pride in everything we do in terms of coaching these kids. We believe that the teams at this age are the foundation of every club. Our team motto at Trojans Under Sevens is Trojans Don't Cry. And it really works. When one of the kids start to cry, we say to them, Trojans don't cry. Well, here at Thornhill, we're always looking for new players. So if your child is interested, we can be contacted via the Thornhill Trojans Facebook page or Pauline Ratcliffe on 07 453 956 162. We were once playing a game against Driglington. One of our little lads was sat there in the middle of the field with his legs crossed, scratching at floor. So I says, you know, I went over to him and I just said, what's up? Are you all right? What's happened? He says, no, I'm fine. He says, I'm just looking for dinosaur bones. Which I thought were quite amusing at the time.
The RHP Show Team of the Week.
That was our Amateur Team of the Week, Thornhill Juniors. As I said, if you want to get your team shouted out on the show, just drop us a line at pulse2.co.uk and we'll play you out in a future week. Boys, we've had a bit of Easter chat. Another big thing that came out of the Easter weekend, especially in that Catalans Castleford game on Monday night, was a bit of a furore about the play of the ball and the ruck and things like that. And it's led to a pretty swift response from the RFL, so we might as well get stuck into that. Changes to the rules, quite a few changes to the rules, in fact, all concerning the ruck. Without getting too much into detail, we've seen that incident where sort of the dummy half has been passing the ball into an opposing player who's lying around the ruck to win a penalty. That's now going to be reversed, so any ball passed into an opposing player around the ruck in any direction will be against the spirit of the game, and that'll now be a penalty to the defending team. There's plenty of other things as well, including sort of deliberately stepping over a man to play the ball into him. We've seen that a lot this year. That's now going to be penalised against the attacking team. It's all about trying to clean up the ruck. Elliot, you've been playing quite a bit this year. I don't know how much of it you've seen in the Championship, but is it a good move to try and tidy the ruck up?
Yeah, it is a good move. To be honest, we've seen a lot of that stuff, right, in the Championship. There were one in our Challenge Cup game against Featherston, and that went out onto Twitter. I think you was commentating, Damien, on the game when the Featherston hooker threw the ball.
That's right, and I think Bradford actually got the penalty,
that was the case. So the Featherston hooker picked the ball up from dummy half and hit our man deliberately. Yeah, the referee saw it deliberately.
So that must have been in the rules at the time.
Yeah,
because the ref called
obviously
that.
Obviously, ref's interpretation, isn't it?
Correct. So what have they done today, Aaron? Have they firmed that up as
they
a more
now
official
said,
rule?
Yeah,
to remove the interpretation.
Yeah, it's going to be deemed as acting in, you know, against the spirit of the game, and it's going to be good. Seen as deliberately sort of. Well, we'll get into whether it's cheating or gamesmanship, I guess, but it's going to be deliberately going against the spirit of the game. So, yeah, penalising the boys, but like you were saying, Minute, for people who probably haven't seen too much of it, we've seen it before where if sort of a guy is laying around in the ruck and he's deliberately not getting back, you know, that is a penalty. But what we're talking about is when a dummy half is deliberately going out of his way to throw the ball in an unnatural angle to a guy who is just surrendered and is out of the way.
I think in all fairness, if the rule's there to be exploited, if you like, smart hookers, people say smart hookers will exploit the rules. They're not actually breaking the rules because it hasn't been written, you know, in like it has been now, clear for everyone. If this is to happen, then the opposing team will get the penalty. So that wasn't in place at the time. So you'd think as a hooker, well, I will exploit that rule. So I think it's a good move out of they've taken that out, so the hookers can't be thinking now, oh, there's a way to get a penalty here. You know, you can't. It's just, like they say, it's against the spirit of the game, and for me, it's a great move by the RFL. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah,
I think maybe it should have been brought in a month or two ago, or the start of the season. But yeah, I'm glad that they've listened to what people are saying, and they've changed it. So well, it's a good
it's
move.
Been an issue in the NRL for quite a while, right. and you got hookers there like Cameron Smith, and which they're pretty wild and pretty quick. And what started happening in the NRL was they wouldn't be bothered trying to slow it down and go into the player on the ruck, because a Cameron Smith would much prefer knowing there's two guys lying on the ground and attacking that defensive line than just getting a penalty and have them set and back on. So I think, you know, it is interpretation. We don't want it going like some other sports where they're playing the rules, and I think it's great from the RFL to come in and change it. Personally, I'm really against rule clarifications and changes mid-season.
NRL
got into that a few years ago trying to do it, and it's so confusing.
Well, you're going to see a difficult couple of weeks, I think, aren't you, initially, while teams and coaches get to grips with it, which might affect things short-term, but long-term, I guess, can only be a good thing.
I think so, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, players know, and it feels the whole momentum of the game, the whole place gets deflated when you see, oh, he's just playing for it. Yeah. So, no, crack on with it, speed the game up and clear the ruck.
It boiled over, like we're saying, it reached ahead on Monday in that Catalans Cast game. It was pretty ugly to watch. There was a lot of it going on from both sides. And I think Darryl Powell said afterwards, we're cheating to counteract their cheating. They likened it to football, said he's never known anything like it. I mean, from an executive boardroom point of view, Damien, if your coach is coming out saying, we're cheating to counteract cheating, what are you making of that?
People are talking about Cass, aren't they?
I suppose,
so I guess, you know, it's all right. Tell me, is Greg Bird still at Catalan?
He is, yeah.
And was he in that game?
He was, yeah.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. I know Birdie very well. Let me tell you, Greg Bird, in an Origin game, when there was a pitch intruder came on at a crucial moment when Queensland through Jonathan Thurston were attacking the New South Wales line, and the pitch intruder came on and fell down around the 5-metre line. And Greg Bird, seeing that and knowing that they couldn't get to the overlap which Thurston created, ran straight into him, deliberately and tripped over, so that when they went to the video ref, they'd say, oh, he's impinged. So I think Birdie's about as good as you'll get in terms of bending, you know, within the rules and doing that. And I've got no problem with it.
Well, this is it. The word cheating is quite a strong word, especially in sport. Now, you've just mentioned the phrase there, bending the rules. Is it cheating or is it gamesmanship?
It's not.
It's a spirit, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not cheating.
It's not cheating.
I don't agree with that. No, it's against the spirit of the game. But like I said, if a rule is there where you can maybe take a yard on it, then
playing for the penalty as opposed to cheating or in the spirit.
Yeah,
when you're playing to get a penalty against.
Yeah, but we say in every game it happens, you could say 10 times it could happen. Certain things in the game where people milk, you know, when you milk something or over-exaggerate something, or, you know, it happens all the time, and this is one area where it's been happening a lot. And I wouldn't say cheating. I think sometimes it's a way
it's
of
a strong word, isn't
getting
it?
An advantage
Very
up.
But the game has always had it. So if someone was offside, come up and you ran at them from dummy half, that wasn't, you couldn't get a penalty by running at an offside position. So effectively it's just one step further. You can't get one now by throwing the ball at them, and that makes sense.
I know some people will probably say it's a knee-jerk thing from the RFL, but I think probably good to see some sort of swift acting on this, isn't there? Obviously it boiled over on Monday, it boiled over Easter, and you've seen the frustrations of the players, particularly if you've seen the games on Sky. Elliot, you've been in the thick of it. When you see your team getting penalised for things like this, it's completely out of your control, and we complain as a sport that the players don't get heard enough. Well, this is surely a step in the right direction.
Yeah, that's it. Like, it's good now that, you know, it's something's happened on Monday, and, you know, it's Wednesday and it's been changed already. I know it's been happening all year, but because of this incident, the game on Monday was, like you say, a bit of a farce, wasn't it? And because of that, it's happened now. But the one that gets me is when the ball hits the man laid in the ruck.
Yeah.
Has that been changed?
Yes, it has, yeah.
Right, that's a good one, because there's... I've been a defender when you're laid in the ruck and the ball hits you and you cannot do anything. You can't disappear.
I mean, you surrender, don't you?
You can't disappear. You're not invisible.
Yeah.
But the ref says, the rule said, if the ball hits you in the act of playing the ball, that's an instant penalty. But how are you supposed to disappear?
I think what the fans want to see and what the game wants to see, they want to see the person in the ruck make a genuine effort to get out and get out of the way. Either lay on the ground and stay out of the way or make a genuine effort to clear and get away.
Yeah, yeah.
If that's happening, then I think it's very unfair if the ball's kicked into you. If you're being a bit cheeky and you're deliberately sort of standing in a way, then certainly the refs should try and penalise you. There was a talk about this new rule where people might just stand either side of the dummy half to block an open side play. Well, then the refs have to be able to penalise that
That's that ref's interpretation, strict. Isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, the rule Elliot's on about. The player playing the ball should maintain balance and control when heeling the ball to the acting halfback. In that situation, the player in the ruck will be penalised if hit by the ball or if, in the opinion of the referee, the halfback is prevented from picking the ball up. So they've obviously gone some way of trying to stamp out. You've seen players jumping over defenders lining the ruck, haven't you, just to play the ball into them. And we've seen, I think most people would agree, that Super League, the speed and pace of the game has improved. But across all levels, I think you could probably say that as well. Certainly in Championship, this is going to help make the game look a little bit more aesthetically pleasing, isn't it, Damien?
The cleanliness of the play of the ball is fundamental to our game.
Yeah.
It's what so many people are attracted to our game over rugby union.
Yeah, it's what separates us, isn't
because
it?
Because the ruck is quite clear.
Yes.
And there's not a million rules around what happens at that ruck. So we've got to keep that clear. And I think this is a long way to going towards that.
Elliot, like, just to touch finally on that, you think it might take a couple of weeks for players to remember to get to grips with? You think there might be a couple of cases in games this weekend where players are forgetting and they're chucking the ball into the players?
Yeah, we've got a few crafty people in our team, so I'm sure.
Flanagan's injured at the minute.
Yeah, well, good job he's injured. But no, it's good for the game. Let's just thought we were working on it in training.
John Kay will be hammering it in.
Yeah, we'll be. No, John, he'll be reading the rules out tomorrow, definitely.
How do you think?
Yeah, definitely.
Look, we're going to go to another break. When we come back, boys are going to have a bit of a rant about something happening in the game at the minute. We're going to look ahead to this weekend's action and just wrap up Easter, everything else. So stick with us on the Robbie Hunter Paul Show.
This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2. Across West Yorkshire, online, DAB, 1278 and 1530 AM. This is Pulse 2.
There have been extra police patrols in Ellen today. It's after a man approached two schoolgirls near to the recreation ground yesterday afternoon. An investigation has been launched by detectives. A yellow weather warning for thunderstorms here in West Yorkshire has been issued by the Met Office. It's in force until 9 p.m. tonight. Forecasters say there could be some temporary disruption to travel and power supplies. And 3.7 million Brits are apparently considering calling in sick tomorrow. It's so they can see Avengers Endgame, the hugely anticipated final installment of the franchise, premieres at midnight tonight. Manchester City could climb back to the top of the Premier League tonight. To do that, they'll need to beat United at Old Trafford. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is the United boss.
There's no hiding place on the pitch. I've said it so many times, and our fans, they will back you as long as you give that effort. And against the City side, that's been very, very good. We've got to turn up.
Well, his side lost 4-0 at Everton in their last game, but City manager Pep Guardiola doesn't think their opponents will be more of a threat because of it.
I saw the game, in fact, what they do. Imagine a little bit what is going to happen against us, and that's all. It's a different game. The game Everton is over, it's finished, new one.
And the winners of the FA Cup will no longer receive champagne. They'll instead be presented with a case of non-alcoholic bubbly. The FA say it's to be inclusive to players whose religion prevents them from drinking. For details on all those stories, go to pulse2.co.uk. That's the latest. I'm James Crossling.
Live on 1278 and 1530 AM, this is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2.
Welcome back to the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2 with me, Aaron Bauer, Elliot Minchella and Damien Irving. Boys, that time of the show. Let's have a little bit of a rant about something that's going on in rugby league at the minute. We've touched on Easter. Interestingly, in the break, just saw RFL chief executive Ralph Rimmer sort of hinting that Easter might drop by the wayside in terms of the double games for Championship next year, saying they've had a lot of complaints and, you know, concerns from players about welfare and things like that. So it seems like, you know, players again getting hurt moving forward, which can only be a good thing. Elliot, jump up. What's on your mind?
So we saw the news this morning. I saw it that Workington has sacked or parted company with our mate Leon Price. Yeah. And I just think it's a little bit harsh. Six games into the season, the 50% record, they've won three, lost three. He had a great first season last year, his first year as a head coach. Yeah. Fresh out of playing, straight into head coach. Got Workington to the playoff final against us, Bradford. They beat us twice in the league.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's done a great job up at Working, and I think it's maybe a bit early in the season to make a decision like that. And
was it a performance? So this interests me because I read the press release from Workington. It's quite an ambiguous press release. It was a little bit of everything in there, and it wasn't clear to me. They didn't come and say performances haven't been good enough, so we feel like we need to change. There was no reason in it, and that's what I think.
And quoting Leon at the same time, which was strange.
That's difficult, and I think generally, rugby league clubs are pretty poor in terms of putting those statements out. Yeah. I don't think we're none the wiser. So do you know the reason, mate, or has it been given
a
reason?
No, I don't know the reason. I've seen a few comments myself saying, you know, maybe a bit of a disagreement or, you know, with the local players up there and, you know, the board. But, you know, I don't know the reason, and I don't think many other people will other than Leon and the board. So on the face of it, from the outside looking in, I just think it's a little bit harsh. I would have liked to see Leon kept the job, and hopefully he gets another job in rugby league, because it would be a shame to see him out of the game. And a man of whose great experience and what he's won and what he's done in the game, it would be good to see him back.
I did see a couple of Workington fans last night saying the sort of club had lost its Cumbrian values and its identity a little bit with the bigger names. I think they've got Moy Moy, Danny Tickle, Sean Penkovic, Ollie Wilkes all up there, although Ollie Wilkes is a Cumbrian. But the facts surely speak for themselves, Damien. I mean, they were ninth the season before he took over. He got them to the playoff final last year. Is it maybe just a little bit too soon, do you think? Or without knowing the full reasons, is it hard to judge?
I don't know the reasons. Performance, if it's based on performance, I think it's definitely too soon.
Yeah.
If they think they can change things up now and change their season around, I do think, look, it's a second year for that group and the manager, which is always difficult. But you know what, I've never been a fan of players getting together and making a decision that they might want to change direction because, you know, players and good units and good clubs that are performing well have a playing group that trusts the manager, that trusts the manager's experience and the runs on the board, and they follow in and they sort of have that belief as a result. If you think that you can get together as a group of players and get the chairman to move on a manager and then somehow expect the group to then have respect and trust for the new guy coming in, you've got another story coming. It's not how it works. No. So if that is the reason, then I really think they're in for a tough end of the season, because you're not going to change that culture by a new manager coming in. There's a number of football clubs have tried it. There's a one across town, you know what I mean?
Absolutely,
so, you can't change the culture of the playing group by bringing in a new head. Once they've had the power to move a manager on, that playing group will always feel that they've got that remit and power, and you can never change that.
You've been in at the coalface in Australian Rugby League and the NRL. I think one thing they've traditionally done a lot better than us is create pathways for players post-retirement and opportunities for players to stay in the game. Important now, I guess, that someone of Leon's calibre, and indeed any coach who loses his job, doesn't just disappear, because the game needs people like Leon. He's got a lot to give to the sport, hasn't he?
And the same reason that I'm a massive advocate for young halves and spine players in here taking on and being given starting roles at Championship League One and Super League level over Australian imports is exactly where I think the coaches in this country need that same respect and opportunity at assistant roles, as skills roles, as defensive specialist coaches, rather than bringing in Australian or overseas coaches to do it. It's the only way. That's where the NRL builds it.
Yeah.
You know, it's where all of the good coaches started. You know, Adrian Lamb's over here in a head coach, but Holbrook, you name it.
Yeah.
All of these assistant coaches were NRL second or third assistants.
Nathan Brown came, won a comp, gone back now.
Absolutely, mate. They all...
Trent Robinson.
Seabold, you name it.
Yeah.
If you're a head coach over there, you were an assistant for a good period of time.
Yeah.
I'm talking 3, 4, 5 years. You've looked over the cap, the recruitment, how you get to know all that, all of your analytics, and you're in that system. So it's a massive apprenticeship. Mm. I don't think the game is giving that long apprenticeship over here to English coaches, because they're going for Australians or others to bring it in. You've got to change that and bring it in. There should be 3 or 4 roles for a Leon Price, or, you know, to go into as an assistant and learn for 2 or 3, 4 years, where he can be employed in the game but learn to be a proper head coach. Mm. And I'm not saying he's not a proper head coach.
He probably deserves credit for doing it the way he's done it, jumping in at the coalface, but at the same time now...
But it happens, and it happens well. Stephen Price, he was a head coach.
Oh.
At the Dragons.
Yeah.
He had a tough time of it there, but did a good job, but then was moved on, as it happens in the big bad world. He went as an assistant. He came to Cronulla as an assistant. He did his he went back and fell back in that assistant role quite happily.
Yeah.
Now he's a very, very good head coach. Very good. Mm. Perhaps the best in the game at the moment, in my view. So
possible.
I just think we need to have those coaching pathways in a coaching industry that they can get that time in. Mm.
But this sort of ties in with what your rant would have been. Was it along those lines, or have you got something else on your mind?
No, that was pretty much that is on it, because you know, I think, you know, and we've had an experience here at Bulls. I'm a big Dane Chisholm fan. He's had a great career over here. Dane's left the club recently, and there's been a lot of talk about why would Dane leave the club, and why should he leave the club, and all of this. And I'm an Australian, and I get it, but I'm massively in favour of that decision if that means that an English half in young Rowan Milnes starts week in, week out, because the only way you're going to win World Cups and the only way you're going to get English halves is to have constant spine players that are there. And so that's my rant. Stop going for washed-up people from Australia, and I'm not saying Dane is one. I'm one. I'm coming over in the game. You know, use British people here. Let them have the experience and back them, because I tell you what, at your peak, you're very, very hard to beat. I grew up through the 80s watching you guys absolutely kick us from head to tail across Ashes series and things. So just back yourselves on that as an English game. I'm a big believer in it.
Does that lead to potentially, if we're going to be serious about that, do you look at reducing the quota? Or do you think the quarter is okay where it is at the minute? I think it's seven, isn't it?
I don't think it's a quota. Personally, I'd be a bit more innovative on that. I'd cut it down. I'd put in a blanket quota ban on spine positions for imports.
Right, okay. So we're just playing English.
If you're going to play 9, 6, 7, or 1 in the top two divisions, you've got to be able to play for England.
Right, okay.
That's a good call.
As someone who dips in and plays halfback from time to time.
Yeah. No, that's an intro. I've never heard of that idea before, and it makes sense, like you say.
Well, I thought it was interesting. I was at Cass Wakefield last week, and all right, this was through injuries and other things, but all four halfbacks out there, and this was an all top four game, were English. Ben Reynolds and Ryan Hampshire for Wakefield, Jacob Truman and Corey Aston for Castleford, and Elliot, you played with Corey Aston at Sheffield. Now, he's had to wait 2.5 years for his chance, but he's played 2 games, he's scored 2 tries. I thought he looked okay in both of them. It's going to take him a little bit of time, but did you look at Corey and think, why isn't he getting a run, or is there a reason why he wasn't getting a run, for example?
Well, you've got to remember he's playing in a cast team, like you say, top four, and he's got Luke Gayle there. Jake Truman's come on the scene and he absolutely took it by storm.
Jumped in front of him, hasn't he? Yeah.
But that's a great example of what Damien's talking about. Jake Truman... he looks so good because he's playing every week. Yeah. He's getting better every single game. If you play Jake Truman 1 week and he misses 4 and he's in again another week, he's hard to, as a halfback as well, for him to control that team, he's got to be in that team every single week, putting his stamp on the game. And in a key position like a halfback, you've got to do that. You can't just... I'm a bit surprised how Corey played, because it was his first game, but he looked like he'd been there a while. You know, he played a while.
And he'd been playing at Newcastle, hadn't he? Which, no disrespect to that level, it's a massive league between Super League and League One.
He certainly surprised a lot of people, but I'm really happy to see it. And he's took his chance, and it's been a long time coming on it. But yeah, I agree. I think that's a great call from Dave. I never thought that myself, but yeah, to have the 1, 6, 7, and 9 all English. Yeah, I think that's good.
Well, what happens is, you know, the reason Australia is so strong at international level is because there's 4 great halves in 6 and 4 great 7s and 4 great 1s all trying to be just the New South Wales halfback.
Yeah.
And then the Queensland. So they have to fight each other off to be... So then you've got and then 4 halves playing each other to go up.
It makes everyone play better, doesn't it, as well?
It certainly does. So you imagine if you had 12 starting 7s, 12 starting 6s, across Super League, you know, you're starting to really get some consistent challenge on.
You would then lose a Theo Farge from the game. Is that not an issue?
To be fair, Theo Farge is internationally qualified for Europe. You know,
I wouldn't
have a problem with the French.
You know, more an Antipodean thing rather than
It is, to be fair. I don't think the Super League's done itself any favours in going for the shortcut option. What I see is the shortcut option. If a halfback is not good enough or not wanted by all of the NRL clubs, why undersell yourself by saying it's good enough to come here? So why pick up? You know, I just don't see that. And we've had, you know, Chrissy Sandow and others who've come and you know, boys, Benny Barber's gone back and they leave the club early. They treat you a little bit like, I'll have you.
Stopgap.
Oh, you're good for me when I need you, but then I don't need you anymore. Why should we lower our game and have that? Yeah. I'm totally against that. If you're not here for good, then don't be here.
Yeah, I think... Lachlan Coote said something to that effect this week, that, look, I'm not here for a couple of years and then I'm going home. He's already talking about 4, 5, 6 years with St Helens.
And he'll be one of the best value imports this game's seen.
And he's the exception to the rule, isn't he? You know, the guys are here
Pat
for
Richards,
the right
you've
reasons.
You've had the Monaghans. Yeah. You've had them. Yeah. And you know, Luke Douglas.
Even if Warrington gets 3 years out of Blake Austin at this level,
I think the best value import in the game, Grant Millington, has demonstrated what you like when you bring your family here and you just demonstrate that you're here for commitment.
Yeah,
but no problem with that at all.
And Senny Lefeo at Castleford, you've seen him at the Sharks. And Danny Richardson said this week, you know, he's only played his third or fourth game since being out of the team. And people are on him already saying, you know, why isn't he playing like he was last year? But it's very hard for anyone in any position, Elliot, let alone a halfback, to have been playing at a lower level for 3 months and then suddenly come back in and turn it on like a tap for the Super League leaders, isn't it?
Yeah, it must be a nightmare, to be honest. It'd be a bit at Lee, and he'd be playing with different lads who he won't have played with ever before at Lee, all different calls, so, you know, under a different coach who has got different structure, who wants to do this on one play and this on another play, then he'll go to St Helens behind a world-class team, or, you know, the best team in Super League at the minute, aren't they? And their coach will want him to do a certain thing, play a certain way, or call different things. It's just an instinct thing. You don't even think sometimes. You just say a call and you don't even think about it. So for going in and out of teams, it must be a nightmare. I've never experienced it myself, but I really feel sorry for these lads who are out on dual reg at one club 1 week, another one the next, then they get called into first team because of an injury.
The loan thing's at least a little bit better, isn't it?
Yeah, for
it's
a month,
even longer, you know, season long. It's like I've seen the lad at Wakefield, Kershaw, who's been at Oldham for a year, and he's now come straight back in, having played in the same system for a year. He's obviously got a little bit more confidence and a little bit about himself, but there you go. Right, final break, and then when we come back, we'll look ahead to all this weekend's games. Before that, here's a final look at the travel.
Pulse 2, travel.
With Living Well, walking briskly for 10 continuous minutes counts as exercise. Search Active 10 online.
There's one lane closed and slow traffic due to a broken down vehicle on the M62. That's westbound from Junction 19 at Middleton Road. At Clough Lane, both directions are partially blocked and slow traffic due to an accident involving 4 vehicles near the Four Sons Inn pub. And the slow traffic on the M606, that's northbound at Rooley Avenue Staygate roundabout. For more information, pulse2.co.uk.
APR. This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show, live on Pulse 2.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Robbie Hunter Paul Show. We're going to look ahead to all this weekend's games, including the Bulls' home game against Rochdale this weekend too shortly. Before that, we've had a question in from a fan, guys. It's from Simon Barraclough. Bulls are a big name in the world of rugby league. I don't think anyone would argue with that. However, in recent years, they've spent time in the lower leagues. If the Bulls were to get back into the Super League, would other teams fear them? Boys, do you think Bulls would still have that fear factor if they got back up into Super League?
If you're in the Super League, you don't fear every side you play, you're mad. You know, and I think clubs generally, I don't think they'd fear. You'd have to be pretty insecure and worried if you were fearful of any club coming in. I'd more hope that they were so keen that they should be fearful of what? The massive fan base?
Yeah.
The motivated new Bulls that have come back in and that momentum? Absolutely. And it'll be a strong Bull side whenever you play them. But I wouldn't personally fear that. I'd say all those are great reasons to have the Bull Army turn up to your place. You know, if you're Salford, you're crying out for Bulls to come back into Super League and bring 3,000 fans over. I would be. Yeah. So I wouldn't be fearing it.
I think that's more the question, isn't it? You know, would Bradford strengthen Super League? And I think you would have to make a case for all the some teams that are currently in there at the minute. A strong Bradford would add more weight to the competition, wouldn't it?
I think we'll find that out when we
do it.
When we do it. Yeah, good point. No, I think it'll be a good indicator when Leeds come to Tuttle in 3 weeks. That'll be a big indicator of the fan base. And if anyone's still wondering if, you know, if Bradford are still that big fan base, and get down to Tuttle and you'll see for yourself.
Is it hard as an ex-Leeds player not to have one eye on Bradford against Leeds on a Saturday afternoon, all the Minchella family down there?
Yeah, it's do you know something? I just played in the last Leeds-Bradford derby.
For Leeds?
Yeah.
Did you?
And we lost. Bradford beat us at Headingley.
Is that right?
Yeah, 2014.
Wow. There you go.
So I'm looking forward to playing another one.
There won't be many left from that Leeds team.
No, I don't think there is many.
Callum Watkins,
maybe. We talked about a little bit at the start, but about this fixture and the meaningful nature of it. It's a great derby, it really is. I mean, it's what
you've
it's
seen
all about.
The reaction from people with Leeds as well, you know, at the game.
Yeah. You know it is, Aaron, and I'm new to town relatively up here, and you know, I've always had a feeling in being here that everyone was like, oh, you know, Bulls are fighting back. They'll be back one day and all that. And in the last week since this cup draw and all that, I've started to feel that they are, that they have arrived back. And because it's people that aren't your day-to-day, day-in, day-out rugby league or sport people even that are mentioning it to me. You know, the local down at the shop that I go and see and people that you bump into, and they're saying, oh, tickets on sale for that yet? Is hospitality packages, are they ready yet? And so you're getting that buzz. It's superseding rugby league and the sport again, which is what Bulls did at the peak. Yeah. So that's really, really exciting, mate. And the game's just got to love that.
Yeah. Right, let's jump into the games. This weekend's fixtures, predictions and whatnot as well. Some big games in Super League this weekend. Saturday, no games Thursday, Friday, or into Easter Monday. Wigan against Castleford, 5:15, Saturday tea time. Cast struggling with numbers. Wigan struggling for form. Elliot?
That's a close game. Yeah. I think there'll only be a try or two in that. I'm going to say Wigan win just because they're at home. They're at the DW. But, yeah, like I said, both teams not really in the best of places. I know Wigan won on Easter Monday, didn't they, at Salford?
A late
try to win that. So, yeah, I'm going to go Wigan, but only just.
What's your reading of Wigan at the minute, Dave? They're obviously in a period of flux and a period of transition, aren't they?
Yeah, and they haven't solved it yet.
No.
So they haven't.
It may be a while as well.
Until they're decisive and have a decisive plan, there's going to be a bit of an unsettled feeling amongst the club. And I think we're seeing that in results. I wasn't impressed with their win last week. I thought, as you say, Elliot, I thought it was a bit flaky.
They were well beaten on Good Friday, weren't they, as well?
Yeah, they were. I've got to say, I think Castleford win this and win this quite well. I think with Powell, they're a far more settled club. They're able to rebound stronger and get it together.
They rarely lose two in a row, do they?
I was looking through it this morning. I think they're actually the banker of the weekend.
Right.
Okay. And they're great value.
There you go. I think I'll take Cass as well. Yeah, I think Cass, they usually do bounce back from defeats quite well, like Damien says. Leeds Hull KR Sunday. Now this is a big game. 11th place Leeds on 6 points, joint bottom with London, against 10th place Hull KR on 8 points. Hull KR, two games over Easter, shipped 110 points. Lost all FC and Warrington by 50. Can they go to Leeds and win?
No.
Win.
It's not often I back Leeds, but I'm going to say Leeds. Yeah. I didn't know that stat actually. I knew they'd lost heavily, but yeah, that's a big.
110-18, I think the aggregate score was over Easter.
And it's hard to fix that quick. It's not a quick fix, that. And, yeah, off a tough Easter period, I can't imagine the spirits are through the roof. I know Leeds lost as well, didn't they, on Monday at Wakefield, but that was only by 2 points.
Yeah. Oh, I think Masoe out for a few weeks, Garber out for a few weeks as well at Hull KR, so really light on middles.
Yeah, I'd say Leeds win then. Leeds win at Headingley.
I think two clubs that are nowhere near again as settled as they want to be off-field in all manner of areas this time of year. And I don't think Leeds have necessarily solved all their problems at the moment, but I thought it was a much more promising performance over Easter. So that said, I've constantly over the years, and my first visit to English Rugby League was over to Hull FC, I've constantly watched KR and the whole side, and every time KR, you know, you think they're nailed on for relegation or they can't win this, and they have got some spirit at that club. They find a way. They really are a tenacious rugby league club. And on that basis alone, if you ask me for a dogfight in the street on which of these two clubs were going to come up, I'm going to go with KR.
Oh, I've got to take Leeds. I think I've got to take Leeds. I'm sorry. Leeds at home. Warrington Huddersfield is another game we're looking at. Huddersfield very up and down. Beat London on Easter Monday, but were beaten at Headingley. Warrington lost surprisingly on Good Friday at Salford, but then hammered Hull KR 54-6. Warrington at home, Elliot.
Warrington win. Blake Austin, he's on fire, isn't he? He's just ripping it up. He's so good to watch as well. He's a runner. That's what I like about him. He just takes the line on, and with him in the team, Warrington win. Huddersfield, they've got a lot better and they've really improved. I remember a few weeks back we were sitting here, and it wasn't looking good for Huddersfield, but they've really turned it round. I know they beat London, didn't they, on Monday, so. That, you know, it'd be a close game. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, but I'm going to say Warrington.
No, I totally agree. Yeah. I think they're a beautifully balanced, well-coached side, and you saw how they turned it around. That's a sign of a really good side. When you come back from an unexpected loss and just put it all together, I think they're going to be way too strong.
Yeah, I agree. Warrington for me. Championship, Sheffield, Halifax. Sheffield joint second now. They beat Toulouse over Easter, so they're level on points with Toulouse. Halifax lost to you boys and then got a real paste in Toulouse. A little bit of pressure there on Richard Marshall. Which way are you going?
I wouldn't say there's pressure. You've got to remember a couple of weeks ago they beat London in the cup.
Yeah.
That was a good win. I went down to that game actually and watched that, and that was a good win. But yeah, they've lost two over Easter, which is not good. They've had a tough Easter going away to Toulouse Easter Monday. And Sheffield, they're on fire.
Yeah, are they?
They absolutely hammered Toulouse on Friday, and they hammered Rochdale as well by 50. So, yeah, and it's at Sheffield. I'm going to say Sheffield win.
Mm. I'm with you. Sheffield are the Leicester City of 2016.
Yeah,
you keep expecting them. When's it going to stop?
And without being disrespectful to them, the players they signed were not pulling. What Mark Aston did is he looked at the best players from the clubs around the lower end of the Championship, the Guzdecks, the Farrells. You know, Anthony Thackeray was playing at a slightly higher rank club, but he's got them playing and he's got them ticking, hasn't he?
I don't want to disrespect them at all by saying that. I think they're well coached. They got very unique conditions there, I think, at Sheffield at their home park, which I think would be strong enough for them to keep up their momentum this week for sure.
Yeah, I think Sheffield. Final game is Widnes Dewsbury. Now, both in the bottom five, Widnes obviously down there due to the points deduction, but Widnes stumbled on Easter Monday at York, and Dewsbury certainly look as though they're capable of winning games like these. They haven't been well beaten on too many occasions this year, Elliot.
Yeah, well, you'll have to look a couple of weeks ago. Batley beat Widnes, didn't they? What did Batley beat Widnes not long ago?
Yeah.
So this is another similar game to that, but I personally think Widnes will be too strong for Dewsbury. That's not taking anything away from Dewsbury. I just think that, Widnes, they look at their team and they've got experience. Harrison Hanson, Hep Kale, McGrath, Lulawai, just look at them. Gellin. And he's got some good ass Danny Craven and Gilmore. I just think that they're a strong team, and I think they'll beat Dewsbury.
David, how high can Widnes get? You know, they realistically could probably only afford to lose a couple more if they're going to make that five. Can they push that far, or do you think it's just about getting out of trouble and working for next year?
I think they could ordinarily, but I think this championship this year is a pretty special competition in terms of the level across the board, and anyone can beat anyone. So I think some of those lower sides where you ordinarily would have expected them to go on long losing runs, it's not going to happen. I think Dewsbury will give Widnes a real shake this weekend. I really do. I think it's a very, very close game, a couple of points in it. I can't see enough sides falling over for Widnes to really make that dent.
I think, and clubs like York, Bradford, Lee are all going to pick up enough points.
Deep competition.
Very
right
deep.
Now.
You go all the way to Halifax in eighth, who have been one of the best teams in the comp in recent years, and you can't get into the top half at the minute. The standard, you've seen it, Elliot, you've played in the comp and in and around it for a while. Is it as strong as it's ever been?
Yeah, definitely. We were talking between the lads, actually. There's no easy game. You know, we come from League One last year where the league was almost split in two. But this year in the Championships, the standard is outstanding across the board. Everyone, you play everyone and you think, wow, these have got some good players, these are a good team, these are well coached, and it's the same every week, so it's a good year.
Good stuff. Listen, boys, thanks for coming in, thanks for joining us. Bulls at home to Rochdale Sunday, 3 o'clock kickoff. Don't miss it. We'll be back next week.
This is the Robbie Hunter Paul Show on Pulse 2.